Today's Monday, November 22. Okay, thank you very much. November 22 in Biochem 421. And we're looking at overhead number 15 in chapter 20. All right, let's go ahead, shall we? I think I went through this. And the next thing is, there was a question about this. This is where the production of acetoacetate comes from, which is the primary ketone body. The other two ketone bodies come from this particular material. And you simply take two acetyl groups under the influence of thiolase. Remember that thiolase that we've seen before? And you get this acetyl-CoA. You add another acetyl group to make a six-membered group called HMG-CoA. And then you have this lyase that breaks it apart back into acetoacetate and acetyl-CoA. Of course, the purpose of making that, it seems ridiculous, doesn't it, in some respects? You got acetoacetate, right? Acetyl-CoA here, and you get this acetoacetate. Just cleave off the, acetyl-CoA. Don't you have the same thing there? Well, the important thing is this intermediate right here, that HMG-CoA. What did I say was the important about that particular intermediate? It's what? Exactly. That is where the six-carbon unit for the building of cholesterol starts, is right there. So the ketone body metabolism has an important role to play in cholesterol metabolism. And so that's why the body makes it right there, is to start off on, that's a target, this particular enzyme here is a target of some cholesterol-lowering medications. Once you have the acetoacetate, of course, then you can go on and make a hydroxybutyrate. We saw that from the previous overhead. And then also acetone. Now, I don't have metabolic fate for acetone. That's an odd thing, but I don't have it here. But we have hydroxybutyrate going back to acetoacetate. It does that nicely and making reducing power with it. You then put a CoA on it, and then the thiolase breaks it down into two acetyl groups that can enter into the citric acid cycle. And as you can imagine, if this is occurring in the brain during starvation, the only way you're going to get energy out of acetyl-CoA is if the electron transport system and the Krebs cycle is still operating pretty efficiently. And for that, you need oxygen. And that's why your brain pretty much uses 20% of the oxygen that you breathe any given instant. It's exclusively used for the brain. Your brain is not 20% of your weight. It's only about 3 pounds. But it uses consistently 20% of the oxygen you consume. So on this side, on the left-hand side, is a synthesis and production of acetoacetate. You might note that occurs primarily in the liver, whereas the conversion of ketones to acetyl-CoA on the right-hand side, that's actually where it begins to be consumed. That occurs primarily in the muscle tissue, brain tissue, and other tissues that I don't remember. But those are the two primary ones right there. And then, of course, you have the production of acetone. When you have way too much acetoacetate, a small percentage of it is going to be converted into acetone non-enzymatically and release the carbon dioxide. And you get this sweet smell on a person's breath that's having severe problems with uncontrolled diabetes. All right, let's go ahead here. We talked about how biosynthesis and metabolism of fatty acids are broken down. They're physically isolated from each other, and they're also chemically isolated from each other. We went through this. You have all this written down. Is that correct so far? All right. Then we go to here. Let's see. Yeah. So the question now is, ladies and gentlemen, you have in the cytosol, you have acetyl-CoA. You have acetyl-CoA ready to act as a building block for biosynthesis. How do we do it? Ding, 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 doom. Well, what happens first, if you look on the previous chart, well, let me go finish this. All All right, there are, in fact, 6 blanks to fill on this page. Let's quickly run through and fill in those blanks, if you don't mind. The first blank is a malonyl, CoA. The second blank up in the corner is called biotin, another one of these materials that uses biotin. Can you recognize the physical structure of biotin? Compare it to the physical structure of TPP? How about of PLP? Can you distinguish that? So you need to be able to physically distinguish between biotin, TPP, I think PLP, which I gave you a structure of, and formic acid, which is coming up here in a little bit in chapter 20 through 21. So you got inactivated glucagon, epinephrine, and insulin make up the last 3. So you got all those filled in, working on it? All right, so if you're going to make fat, you oddly enough don't begin with a 2-carbon unit. You begin with a 3-carbon unit. And that 3-carbon unit is called malonyl-CoA. So you take a carbonate, which you can get readily from the circulation, and that puts a carbon dioxide on this enzyme, biotinylated enzyme. Then acetyl-CoA comes in and makes this malonyl-CoA. And malonyl-CoA is the high-energy beginning of fat biosynthesis. The acetyl-CoA carboxylase, that's the enzyme that does this, is regulated by phosphorylation. Oddly enough, it says upon a phosphorylation, the enzyme is inactivated. Now, do you think that makes sense, recalling glycogen and a glycogen phosphorylase regulation? Do you think that makes sense? That if this acetyl-CoA carboxylase, that's this enzyme right here, that makes malonyl-CoA, and I've told you malonyl-CoA is the 3-carbon unit they use to make fats, does it make sense that it's inactivated and malonyl-CoA production is reduced if it gets phosphorylated? Yes, I think it should. Yeah. Let's take a look. What chapter was that again that we did that glycogen phosphorylase? That was what, chapter, was it 17 or 18? Let's see. Not citric acid cycle. Must have been, was it 16? Let's see here. Yes, there it is. See if we can find. Boom, boom, boom. Now, looking at this again, ladies and gentlemen, you can see that with high levels of cyclic AMP, the protein kinase A becomes activated, and so its catalytic units begin to act on other enzymes. The purpose of this, of course, eventually is to shut down glycogen synthase and turn on glycogen breakdown. Now, you want glycogen breakdown because either your cell needs energy or your body needs energy in the form of glucose. So notice, I phosphorylated the glycogen phosphorylase to turn it on to break down glycogen to make glucose and glucose-6-phosphate and glucose in the blood, to dump glucose in the blood. That means that the body needs energy. Is that correct? Yes, it does. Thank you very much. Ding, 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 ding. If the body or the cell needs energy, are you going to be synthesizing fat? Are you going to be synthesizing fat at the body? No. So the same high levels of cyclic AMP that turn on glycogen phosphorylase and the breakdown of glycogen to boost glucose for the blood That same high level of phosphorylation acts on this enzyme to deactivate it so it's not trying to make fat while you're needing carbohydrate or food or fuel in your blood. That's the logic there. Phosphorylation is accomplished by, look at that. Guess what's missing right there? Would you mind putting a C in there? I missed the C. Cyclic AMP-dependent protein kinase. What's the other name for that, of course? Protein kinase A. Thank you very much. Glucagon, epinephrine promote phosphorylation. Happens by inhibiting dephosphorylation. Insulin stimulates dephosphorylation, activates. So insulin says what? Insulin in your blood says there's plenty of fuel there. Go ahead and start storing it. And so the insulin then stimulates dephosphorylation of this enzyme, this thing right here, this thing, that enzyme, and thus begins to allow malonyl-CoA production, which is then the first three carbons used for fat biosynthesis. Does all this stuff make sense? Does this rationally make sense? Or is it penetrating today? All right, good. Production of palmitic acid, palmitate, involves seven enzymes on a single 534 kilodalton. Okay, there's not much on here. There's two blanks, a dimer or dimmer, dimer probably, and then ACP. Ever, you know, I one time was... Someone came up with this mental image. I don't know if it was a story or a cartoon in which there were two tables. There was a big table in heaven and another big table in hell. And the people sitting around it were sitting in front of enormous amounts of food. Just all kinds of food. But each person had both arms broken and in splints. So they couldn't bend their elbows. Okay. Well, the people in hell had all this food in front of them, and they were starving to death. But the people in heaven had that same amount of food, but they were healthy and enjoying themselves because why? They were sharing, they were feeding each other, whereas the people in hell were being selfish and, you know, we're not going to feed each other and they'd rather starve than help somebody else. This is an odd way of putting this this thing, this dimer, you see this protein gun? What happens is, and if you read in the text, it's pretty handy, the thing is actually, it's a, and let's see here. It kind of looks like a yin and yang symbol, doesn't it? Turns out that this acyl carrier protein, ACP, is on one of the dimers, but it extends out, and the enzyme activities are out here, as it were. And so the ACP of one dimer is actually using the enzyme activities of the other dimer to build the fatty acid chain. So the ACP of the individual dimer is actually not acting on the enzymes of that dimer, but on the opposing or opposite or the paired dimers. Let's take a look at some of the chemistry now. Did I have you memorize this? I think I did, didn't I? Yeah, parts of it. All right, let's take a look at it. First of all, now have we just made malonyl-CoA? What enzyme did we use to make malonyl-CoA? What was the name of it? Acyl-CoA carboxylase. So that's a high-energy intermediate. Here we have another acetyl-CoA. And so you have, finally, the malonyl-CoA gets attached to the acyl carrier protein. You have this acetyl-CoA also attached to an acyl carrier protein. And finally, they get together, and they make a four-carbon unit called acetoacetate ACP. Notice you lose the carbon dioxide in this. Notice you lose the carbon dioxide you just put in with that malic acid. Or not malic acid, but acyl-CoA carboxylase. And then guess what happens? To build a fat, the body does the exact opposite that it does to destroy it or break it down. Here you go. So, what they do then, they have this ketone group. They then do what to it? Reduce it. What is the reducing power? Again, what did I say? NADPH was for biosynthesis. Where is the vast majority of that NADPH coming from? What pathway? Pentose phosphate pathway. Yes. Pentose phosphate pathway. Yeah. So that gets reduced. You get the hydroxybutyrol. Then what happens? Dehydrates, removes that water and make a double bond. Another NADPH comes in, reduces that double bond. You then now have saturated carbon right there. And guess what happens? You then recycle that back and begin to build it with two carbon units. But that first carbon unit is always that malonyl CoA. Finally, you get palmitoyl CoA, three carbons, thioesterase, cleaves it off, you got palmitic acid right there. Voila, you've just made yourself a fat, or fatty acid at least. All right, now the overall stoichiometry is of the following. Now, what I'm going to ask you to do in your text, ladies and gentlemen, in the body of the reading of your text, are three equations that match those exact blanks right here. I would like for you to refer to your text and fill it in. Refer to your text and fill it in. All right. So, you have two blanks on that page. One is called elongation. The other is called desaturases. Yes, your body does make a few unsaturated fatty acids for you. But as a meat, you're fairly unhealthy. Cannibals never really had a long lifespan because they were eating humans. And of course, cannibals never did like eating clowns because they taste funny. That's exactly correct. Now, you need to remember that. That joke will come in handy every once in a while. So when you're going to be leaning over some poor child who's not that sick, but it's not feeling that good. It needs to be livened up a little bit. And this stupid joke about clowns, I know you don't like this food, but, at least I'm not serving you clowns. Huh? What? Some 14-year-old boy that likes gross jokes like that. You'll make his day, and your parents will think, rise up and call you blessed because you made him smile over a stupid joke like that. But at any rate, mark my words, I've gotten into your brains more than you think. All right? No! I'm going to have to go to therapy to get rid of the Dave Novak in my head. All right, so fill that in there. And again, remember what I just said about the physical association of dimer units? The acylcarbopropion of one unit holds a growing fatty acid for the other subunit. That's how I put it. Elongation, you don't make just 16s. You can make this process can make 12s and 14s and 16s, but it can't take anything longer than a 16. But you do have fatty acids in your body longer than 16. The arachidonic acids and stuff necessary for the prostaglandin synthesis, as one comes to mind. So there's got to be an elongation process. Turns out the elongation process depends on where the elongation occurs. It can occur within with acyl-CoA, with malonyl-CoA, and the mitochondria also. So there's elongations occurring in the ER and the mitochondria. You also have to make unsaturated things. This delta-9, delta-6, delta-5, and delta-4 fatty acyl-CoA desaturases. The delta indicates the position from the fatty acid, from the hydrocarbon end, not from the carbonyl end. So these then have a variety of, so you have four of these different saturases, each of them going ahead and making a different unsaturated hydrocarbon bond at different locations. They can make all the fatty acids, unsaturated fatty acids you want, except for In the above enzymes, X-rated 5, and X-rated can be contain double bonds. CH2Y is always saturated. You know double bonds are always 3 carbons close to CoA group, but never any close to 9OA in animals. Thus, linolenic acid cannot be synthesized. So, there's 3 blanks here. Linolenic, essential, and water. Linolenic, essential, and water. If you're eating anything at all, you're getting linolenic acid. That's how ubiquitous it is. But you nevertheless, if they've managed to feed animals without it, they can get a nutritional disease from it. Animals deprived of linolenic have poor growth, poor wound healing, and dermatitis. Poor constituent epidermal sphingolipids that function as the skin's water permeability barrier. This is a quote directly taken from your text. That's why I have it in quotes and italicized. Animals deprived of linolenic acid, I thought this was interesting, must drink far more water than those with an adequate diet. Did you realize that your skin acts basically like a waxy coating over your fleshy interior? And if it wasn't for that waxy coating, you'd evaporate a lot more water out of your skin than you do now. That's why soaps and detergents never remove all the oils from your skin. You'd have very, very harsh, damaged skin, and you'd also start leaking and evaporating water. All right, well, let's take a look then at the summary of this lipid metabolism. So you got the triacylglycerols and fatty acids, and you can see that that's a reversible process using different pathways. Fatty acids can go on to make membrane lipids. Under fatty acid oxidation, you can make acetyl-CoA with FADH2 as NADH. Fatty acid synthesis requires ATP and NADPH. Once you have the acetyl-CoA, you can go on and make cholesterol through what intermediate? What's that? What's the first 6-carbon unit that makes cholesterol? HMG-CoA. And where do you find that material? What pathway? No. Ketone body synthesis. So here you got ketones. I don't know why. This is actually a misnomer. Acetyl-CoA should have cholesterol intermediate and then ketone bodies, but that's what they did here. Citric acid cycle, lots of reduced electrons and makes plenty of ATP. All right, let's go ahead now. This triacylglycerol biosynthesis, this is a diagram that I'm not expecting you to memorize. I just wanted to show it to you. I thought it was fairly interesting. Let's see here. This dihydroxyacetone phosphate. Where do you find dihydroxyacetone phosphate anyway? Where is that found? Huh? Glycolysis and also fructose breakdown. And that dihydroxyacetone phosphate gets made into glycerol 3-phosphate. That glycerol 3-phosphate then gets a fatty acid attached to it, and you get this 1-acyl lysophosphatidic acid. So once you put a fatty acid backbone on the glycerol 3-phosphate, it turns it into phosphatidic acid. Phosphatidic acid. You then transfer it again, and now you have, or lysophosphatidic acid, you have 2 fatty acid groups on that glycerol backbone with a phosphate. There you get your phosphatidic acid. And these arrows indicate that you add polar head groups, and once you add these various polar head groups, that's where you get your phospholipids, which are the membrane components. So, to me, I think that's fascinating. You then, of course, can go on and remove the phosphate and get this diacylglycerol and add another fat to it, and that's where you get your triglycerides right here. So this is fats right here. That's high energy storage, insulation, this kind of thing. Secondary sexual characteristics right here. And then phospholipids up here. It's a different, slightly different pathway that you make your phospholipids from. We don't show any of how you add the polar head groups or their synthesis. What on this do you need to know? Well, not much. I mean, yeah. The building block for fatty acids, for fats, of course, is that is the glycerol, and that. Not much. You just need to be able, in this case, to be able to refer to it if you ever have a question later on in your education. Regulation of fatty acid metabolism, of course, involves the whole body, thus involves hormones. Let me see, where do we got going on here? I think this is an entire page of stuff, isn't it? There we go. Okay, so there are some blanks here. The first two blanks you find across the top are glucagon and epinephrine. Throw those two in there. Glucagon, epinephrine. Adipose tissue, hormone-sensitive lipase. For reasons I can't explain, I didn't get the E in red, which is activated by the cyclic ATP-dependent protein phosphorylation system. Ketone bodies is next. Then number two begins with insulin. Has the opposite effect. And stimulates glycogen triglyceride synthesis. Reduces cyclic AMP-dependent levels. Activates acetyl-CoA carboxylase. Now, once again, what are we using the acetyl-CoA carboxylase for? What does that do? It makes what? Malonyl-CoA, is that correct? And that's the first step in fatty acid synthesis. That makes sense, doesn't it? Glucagon-insulin ratio determines fatty acid metabolism, whether it's going to be turned on or turned off or whatever. All right, well, let's take a look. So, glucagon, epinephrine, if I have high levels of that circulating in the blood, it activates that cyclic AMP-dependent phosphorylation system turned on, which means it's turned on by glucagon, epinephrine, thus stimulates lipolysis, raising the blood fatty acid levels and also raising the blood ketone body levels. This leads to production of ketone bodies in the liver. Acetyl-CoA carboxylase is inhibited, not surprisingly. In general, fatty acid oxidation is stimulated, fatty acid synthesis inhibited with high levels of glucagon and epinephrine. That would make sense to you. Fight or flight, is that right? If you got the epinephrine in high levels, you want lots of fats in your bloodstream, is that right? Yeah. Well, there's a variety of stress hormones, one of which is epinephrine. So under situations of high stress, you're going to have elevated levels of fatty acids and fats in your blood because the body's thinking, hey, you're getting ready to move. Go. We need plenty of energy available. But what if you had a high-stress job in which you sit down most of the day? Is that going to cause a problem, do you think? Yep. Any questions about what happens with the insulin and so on? Any questions at all? Does it make sense metabolically? What insulin's for? Insulin's saying you have lots of energy in your bloodstream. You need to capture it, hold it, store it. And so it increases the carboxylase, among other things. Glycogen and triglyceride synthesis. Insulin has a huge number of effects, not all of them still yet known. And they believe that insulin may have effects on other diseases other than diabetes. Errors in insulin metabolism. All right. Now, we can see a diagram right here in your text. The caption in this diagram is very, very handy. Please read the caption connected to this figure. Please read the caption. We'll go through this to some degree, and let's divide this. Let's take an overview of what this is. This top part, there are actually just divided into thirds, but the top two-thirds is a single cell. It's a liver cell. Hepatocyte is the name of it. Hepatocyte. Liver cell. Thy name is hepatocyte. And you'll see that they are talking about two different situations here. They're talking about fatty acid biosynthesis on the left and fatty acid oxidation on the right. Then they begin to look at how is the biosynthesis and oxidation affected by various hormone levels. Well, if you take a look at the first box, which says inhibited by... Yeah, what? Yeah, never mind. Inhibited by AMP and cyclic AMP-dependent protein phosphorylation... So if you have cyclic AMP-dependent phosphorylation, you are slowing down acetyl-CoA carboxylase, which inhibits the fatty acid biosynthesis. So that slows it down. That same enzyme, however, is activated by insulin-dependent dephosphorylation. So high levels of insulin turn this process on. And you make lots of triglycerides, and you make lots of VLDLs, which gets transported to fat storage, adipose tissue. There's the lipoprotein lipase, which then frees up the fatty acids, which stores them then in the triglycerides. High levels of insulin then turn on that carboxylase, which means you're making lots of malonyl-CoA. Turns out that malonyl-CoA inhibits the transport of fatty acid azole-CoA into the mitochondria in preparation of breakdown. So high levels of malonyl-CoA both stimulate the synthesis and inhibit the breakdown. They inhibit the breakdown by slowing down the transport of the fatty acids into the mitochondria for oxidation. If, however, you have cyclic AMP-dependent phosphorylation in the adipose tissue, if you make under other metabolic situations that you need fat for energy, the free fatty acids are created by the hormone-sensitive lipase, which then transports the fatty acids. Notice the fatty acid albumin complex, where fatty acids are primarily carried by albumin in your blood, taken to the liver, where they're released as fatty acids, enter the mitochondria, and end up getting broken down as ketone bodies and dumped into the bloodstream. If, however, you also need energy, some of that fat is used by the mitochondria to enter the citric acid cycle and make lots of ATP. And you also need to make lots of NADH if you're going to make gluconeogenesis. So, as I've mentioned earlier, and I'll repeat again, your liver primarily uses fat as an energy source so that it's then free to manipulate its carbohydrate stores without affecting its own metabolism, either by accumulating glucose or releasing glucose. Since it's using fat, it can do that much more readily without having to worry about how it's going to affect its own metabolism, the liver's metabolism. All right. Anyway, let's go ahead. Notice how the extension here, palmitate, stearate, oleate, how it the different desaturations and so on are typically occurring in the smooth ER, and then makes the fat and so on. All right, well, let's go ahead. Cholesterol metabolism, ladies and gentlemen. Really very straightforward. I'm not going to ask you to know too much about this because it's fairly complicated. If you look in your text, there's like 20 or 30 steps to making it. All right, so there's ketone bodies, ketone, and the HMG-CoA, and that's all it is. So let's take a look at this first diagram that you write here. This is an old diagram. It's taking from an old version of this text. I just think it's kind of handy to memorize the different positions of where all these two carbon acetates make cholesterol. I'm not asking you to memorize this, of course. I just think it's kind of interesting how you can build up something this complicated from two carbon units. Not unlike Legos, ladies and gentlemen, how you can make these elaborate buildings and imaginary worlds with just a few dozen different types of Legos. Let's take a look at the beginning part of its of the synthesis. Of course, I mentioned earlier that the synthesis of cholesterol always begins with what? HMG-CoA. Where do I get that from? Ketone bodies. It gets reduced, makes mevalonate, gets phosphorylated, makes phosphomevalonate, then adds it. It gets phosphorylated again to get 5-pyrophosphomevalonate. And finally, some of that's removed and you get this something known as a carbon dioxide. Isopentanyl pyrophosphate. This thing. This is an isoprene unit. This thing right here. It's very similar to what they make turpentine out of if you're a pine tree. But here you get this 5-carbon unit that is the beginning of cholesterol synthesis. So the two points of interest here are HMG-CoA is the beginning, then isopentanyl pyrophosphate is an important intermediate. So if I ask you for some important intermediates of cholesterol metabolism, I want you to say HMG-CoA and isopentanyl pyrophosphate. There are two or three others I want you to know, simply as names, not as structures. Those are coming up here. And I don't know what's happened here, but there is then a manipulation of the isopentanyl group to make this dimethyl allyl pyrophosphate. So isopentanyl comes in, combines with another compound, and makes this geranyl pyrophosphate, farnesyl pyrophosphate, and squalene. Now, it looks like I have two figures on top of each other, but oh well. What I want you to commit to memory, ladies and gentlemen, is the following. I want you to know that isopentanyl pyrophosphate, geranyl pyrophosphate, farnesyl pyrophosphate, and squalene are all hydrocarbon intermediates in cholesterol biosynthesis. I do not need or want you to know the structure. I simply want you to be able to know that if someone's talking about farnesyl pyrophosphate, they're talking about cholesterol biosynthesis. That's it. Cholesterol biosynthesis. The terminal end of this is squalene. Squalene is the final linear intermediate in cholesterol biosynthesis. All right, so you have this elaborate squalene that you see right here. It can fold under the influence of an enzyme into this structure, under the influence of elemental oxygen, which is about as harsh a condition as your body's going to find. Okay? Oxygen being used directly in an enzyme synthesis is basically using a sledgehammer on a hydrocarbon as far as the body is concerned. You can't get any harsher conditions than that. You're just going, bam! Okay? And so with this oxygen and reducing, again, NADPH is right there, dealing with biosynthesis. Where are we getting that NADPH from? Thank you very much. It takes this double bond and adds an oxygen to it to make an epoxidase, to make an epoxide. And you know that triangular epoxide is a high-energy intermediate, isn't it? Lots of steric strain and so on. So you get this oxidosqualene. The next enzyme then, in a single step, breaks that double bond, and there is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 electron pair shifts of those double bonds, and immediately you go from no rings to 4 rings. From this 2,3 oxidosqualene to lanosterol. So lanosterol is the first steroid ring of cholesterol biosynthesis. Cholesterol is actually not made initially. Lanosterol is. That's what has the four-membered ring that's characteristic of steroids in cholesterol. All right, so let's review. I want you to know that the beginning structure for cholesterol synthesis is what? HMG-CoA. If that the next intermediate I want you to be aware of is called isopentanyl pyrophosphate. The next intermediate from that is geranyl pyrophosphate. And the next intermediate is farnesyl. And the final one is called squalene. And the squalene is the last linear-only intermediate. It then gets oxidized, literally, to make an epoxide. An enzyme triggers the breakage of that epoxide to shift 4 or 5 pairs of electrons to move from linear to a 4-ring structure called lanosterol. Now, would you be sick if this did not happen at all in your body? Absolutely. Cholesterol is not the evil compound that health people want to scare you into. You need it. You make about 600 milligrams of it a day. And that's that. You got to have it. Okay. Well. Now, none of these. There's a little bit of homework. There's a glossary quiz, a summary quiz. This will be due Friday, ladies and gentlemen. The take-homes have yet to be loaded on D2L. So all this stuff will be on D2L, and it'll be assigned before the end of the... You have to turn it in before the end of the semester. Before the end of the semester. Right. Exactly like they are. Yeah, I know. I just need to have her loaded up on D2L. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can just grab some from her. All right. Now, unfortunately, I have chapter 19 ready to go. I should say, when I say unfortunately, I mean it needs to, it's the first 8 slides are printed out. They're stuck up. I mean, they're up in the, in the duplicating office. Mr. Musselman, you know where the duplicating room is in biology? Have you been there before? Anybody know where the duplicating room is in biology in that central? Oh, there you go. Would you mind running up and getting them? They should be a big old stack right there of stapled ones. Okay. Now we're going backwards again a little bit, but that's okay. Let's get going. Now, while she's gone and getting that, by the way, I uploaded it. It should be on D2L for you. If you have your computer here, it's on D2L. So there's only like 12 or 13 slides on it. So now we're having a test when? Is it Tuesday? Now, we could just easily make it Wednesday. Is there any difference between Tuesday and Wednesday for you? What's going on? Yes?
I have a system's final on Wednesday.
Your final's on Wednesday? Oh, you're kidding. And what about, what are you guys doing for dead week? I mean, for test week? All right, fine. I mean, I can, I mean, I'm just asking. I don't know. I mean, Tuesday's fine by me. Okay. What this means is, ladies and gentlemen, is that the test we're having is not going to have anything on chapter 19. Okay. So I'm going to lecture on Monday about photosynthesis. And you need to be here because there's an extensive section, 3-4 questions, on photosynthesis on the ACS final. Okay. So that's why we're continuing to lecture. Right? So when you come, you've got to come Monday and you got to come Wednesday and Thursday. I don't know what we're doing Thursday. Let's just see how we're doing. You got to come certainly Monday and Wednesday. And, of course, we'll have the test on Friday. So what's the test going to on Tuesday? What's the test going to cover?
15 to 20.
Accepting what? 19. We're not going to do anything on 19. All right? Okay. So there it is. That's not all. What she's got now is not all of chapter 19. Excellent. Thank you very much. All right. There we go. So this has got a bunch of them. I think probably the only thing we're going to have left to do is just fill these in. So go ahead and begin filling these in about photosynthesis. I love photosynthesis. I think it's absolutely miraculous biochemistry going on. So the first one is oxidation. The second one is reduction. The third one over here is light reactions. Then you have dark reactions on the second blank. Then the three chloroplasts, three compartments. You got the intermembrane compartment. You got your stroma. You got your thylakoid compartment. What happens in each of those? Of course, you got your carbohydrate synthesis and DNA, RNA, ribosomes, protein synthesis, thylakoid compartment, light harvesting complexes, electron transport, ATP synthesis, and the granum turns out to be the folded stacks of the thylakoid membranes, and you can see that right here. Now, if just make a note, if you would, well, since this is not going to be on the test, I can't tell you to memorize it, I guess, but you ought to be able to point out these different pieces here if there's a fill in the blank. All right, I guess, yeah, I need to, yeah. If I recall what's on the standardized final, they may ask what goes on in each of the compartments here. So you need to know, identify the compartments by visualization. The diagram in the text is nice and big, so you can use that as a reference. I think we're going to have to be done for the rest of the day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much. We'll see you tomorrow morning. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.